A man came home from work late again, tired and irritated to find his 5-year-old son waiting for him at the door. "Daddy, may I ask you a question?"
"Yeah, sure, what is it?" replied the man.
"Daddy, how much money do you make an hour?"
"Well, that's none of your business. What makes you ask such a thing?" the man said angrily.
"I just want to know. Please tell me, how much do you make an hour?" pleaded the little boy.
"If you must know, I make $20 an hour."
"Oh," the little boy replied, head bowed. Looking up, he said, "Daddy, may I borrow $10, please?" The father was furious. "If the only reason you wanted to know how much money I make is just so you can borrow some to buy a silly toy or some other nonsense, then you march straight to your room and go to bed. Think about why you're being so selfish. I work long, hard hours every day and don't have time for such childish games." The little boy quietly went to his room and shut the door. The man sat down and started to get even madder about the little boy's questioning. How dare he ask such questions only to get some money? After an hour or so, the man had calmed down and started to think he may have been a little hard on his son. Maybe there was something he really needed to buy with that $10, and he really didn't ask for money very often. The man went to the door of the little boy's room and opened the door. "Are you asleep, son?" he asked.
"No, Danny, I'm awake," replied the boy. "I've been thinking. Maybe I was too hard on you earlier," said the man.
"It's been a long day, and I took my aggravation out on you. Here's that $10 you asked for." The little boy sat straight up, beaming. "Oh, thank you, Daddy," he yelled. Then, reaching under his pillow, he pulled out some more crumpled-up bills. The man, seeing that the boy already had money, started to get angry again. The little boy slowly counted out his money, then looked up at the man. "Why did you want more money if you already had some?" the father grumbled.
"Because I didn't have enough, but now I do," the little boy replied.
"Daddy, I have $20 now. Can I buy an hour of your time?" You know, I thought that was a great introduction to any one of the messages of this current series. And this will be the Elijah Company, Part 5. Once again, based upon the prophecy given to Malachi regarding Elijah and fulfilled in John the Immerser, or at least it began to be fulfilled in John the Immerser, who was to return the hearts of the children to their fathers and the hearts of the fathers to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just. Let me read the account again, at least part of it, from Luke chapter 1, verses 15 through 17. It says, "For he shall be great in the sight of the Lord, and he shall drink neither wine nor strong drink, and he shall be filled with the Holy Ghost even from his mother's womb." And of course, this is written or prophesied about John the Baptist. And many of the children of Israel shall he turn to the Lord their God, and he shall go before him in the spirit and the power of Elias to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. Note once again the three-pronged commission. The message of Christian Israel, wherein the hearts of the children, that is, each generation of Israelites, is returned to the heritage of their Israelite forefathers. The message of the law, that is, turning the disobedient to the wisdom of the just. And the message of dominion, that is, turning the hearts of each generation of fathers to training the present generation of children with the purpose of training and equipping the next 2, 3, and 4 generations of children with Christian Israelite dominion as the objective. That is, the kingdom here on earth, as it already is in heaven. And once again, there hasn't been an Elijah Company in America for some time, because not only must we be preaching and teaching our people their Israelite heritage, not only must we be instructing our people in the absolute necessity of Yahweh's law for today, but we must also have fathers who are devoted to raising and training their children and grandchildren to be spiritual warriors in this battle for dominion. However, to date, at least as far back as I can see, we have instead had generations of children, our children, who have been neglected by their fathers, who, like the little fellow in the story I just read to you, who have had to, quote unquote, buy an hour from their fathers in order to have any time with them whatsoever. That story is tragically, more often than not, a commentary on 20th century fatherhood. That's how far away from God's calling of us as fathers, us men as fathers, that's how far we've gone astray. Because that is sadly the commentary of 20th century fatherhood today, more often than not. And for that reason, this series is devoted to inspiring men, inspiring fathers to be themselves Christ-centered, adoring husbands, and devoted fathers, patriarchs in their own right, who will in turn raise and train future patriarchs that someday, by God's grace, will see this nation turn back to God, run by His liberating laws, rather than man's self-destructing edicts. Now, in the previous messages, I discussed the patriarchal training of infants, adolescents, and young men. In part 4, I specifically discussed giving our sons the vision of being successful providers of their home, along with training them the art of being good husbands. And it is indeed an art, and one that must be taught, first by example, and then followed with one-on-one instructions, fathers with their sons and even their grandsons. The same is true when it comes to preparing our sons to be good fathers. In order for them to have a good shot at being a good father, and I'll settle for good. Now, it'd be nice to have some great fathers, but I'll settle for good at this point in time. But in order for them to have a good shot at being a good father, they must have a good example in a father to emulate, one whose time with them doesn't have to be bought. A father who not only is devoted to his children when they're young, but who also has a vision for their future, a vision for their future role in the kingdom of God. We've got to get beyond just first we've got to get a vision for their future. But we've got to see that vision for their future entails having a vision for their future role in the kingdom. Or even our involvement with them. And our vision for the future is for naught, essentially, or for very little, at least as the overall scheme is concerned. Their future role as spiritual warriors who play a part in taking dominion back from the Antichrist, and who will thus raise them with this idea dominating their thoughts. So, with that in mind, where does this type of fatherhood, patriarchy, begin? Well, it begins with praying for each and every one of our children, each and every day of our lives. That's at least it needs to begin there. A man who's not daily praying for his children, for the salvation of his children, for their protection spiritually, emotionally, and physically, for their future mates, or for the parents who are raising their future mates if their children are young, for their future occupations, for their individual needs, and especially for the wisdom himself to know how to best raise, train, and direct them, is a man who simply doesn't love his children nearly as much as he should. And there's just no way around that. If you're not praying for your children in those regards, as the patriarch of your home, if you're not praying daily for them, then you're a father who doesn't love your children near as much as he should, and who doesn't have their best interest at heart. It begins with fathers who are devoted to their children enough to pray for them every day of their lives, in the same way that Nehemiah prayed for the children of Israel. In Nehemiah 1:6 it says, "Let thine ear now be attentive, and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now, day and night, for the children of Israel thy servants." Nehemiah was obviously a great man of prayer. Like the Apostle Paul, I'm amazed with the Apostle Paul's prayer life as he talks about praying for those children, his spiritual children in the churches. Well, should it be any different for us as fathers? that we be day and at least daily. Nehemiah was day and night praying for other people's children. So, whatever your age or the age of your children, are you still daily praying for them? Should that ever end as parents, as fathers? Or have you given up on them? Or on God's ability to change their lives if they're not yet Christians or they're not living their Christian lives as they should? Well, shame on us. If even when we are older, if an hour a day must be quote-unquote bought in order for us to pray for our children, shame on us. I point out in weddings that I perform, as I've shared in previous messages, that far too many look upon, or as I share in, I point out in the marriages, I don't know if I've ever pointed this out in a message before, but I do point out in messages that I perform that far too many look upon marriage as being an event, when in actuality, the wedding is the event. Marriage is a lifetime accomplishment. We need to, as husbands and wives, we've got to start looking at it that way. The event is what starts the lifetime accomplishment. It should never end. Let's face it, marriage sometimes is a struggle. Sometimes it's not easy. You know, after some of the feelings, the drives that we have as young people, wear a little thin, or after you get used to somebody after years of being with them. And now, not that this ever happens with me and my wife. Don't misunderstand me here. But the fact is that it happens. And so it's a struggle. And that's why it's a lifetime accomplishment. That's what an accomplishment is. It's overcoming the struggles and getting better than what you were in the past. Learning from your struggles. Well, in the same fashion, fathers, procreation is an event, whereas fatherhood is also a lifetime endeavor. And patriarch is a generational vision and goal. It goes beyond even the lifetime endeavor. Our involvement with our children, at least as it pertains to praying for them, should never end. Now, let me once again get a little more practical, although I don't know that you can get any more practical than prayer. But nevertheless, as Joshua was told while praying after the Israelites defeated Ai to get up and act, the same holds true for fathers today. As fathers, we must do more than just pray for our children. That's where it begins, and if we aren't doing that, we better get at least that much down pat. As fathers, we have to do more than just pray for our children. We must be proactively involved in the lives of our children. For example, and once again, it is primarily the responsibility of fathers to spiritually instruct their children. Ephesians 6 and verse 4, it says, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up." But ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and in the admonition of the Lord. Not mothers. Fathers. Now, not that mothers don't have an integral part in that. And they play a very integral part in that. And too often more integral than it should be, because they're having to take up the slack of fathers who aren't being the primary spiritual instructors in their children's lives. But it's the fathers. And this should be done not only with our children, but with our grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren. You say, well, how can I, I'm not going to be around that long. Well, you didn't let me finish the sentence. Not only with our children, but with our grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren in mind. You know, we may only have the opportunity. Our life may only be there long enough to have an opportunity to train our children. We may not see our grandchildren, but we at least should have our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren and our great-great-grandchildren in mind. As pointed out in
the 78th Psalm. If you want to turn there, Psalm 78, and beginning with verse 1. Pay attention to what we find here. In verse 1 it says, "Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praises of Yahweh and His strength and His wonderful works that He has done. For He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which He commanded our fathers, first generation, that they should make them known to their children, second generation, that the children to come might know them, third generation, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children, fourth generation." And I'm not so sure that reading that again, that there's not five generations there, but there's at least four generations that they were to have in mind as they instructed their children. Going on, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. If there is ever a hope outside of God's intervention, but as we look up, as we wait for that, but not idly wait, as we look to the future, if there's ever to be a hope based upon what God intends for us to do, for to change where things are at now, according to this passage, so that they not be like their fathers of old, like the fathers they have now in many cases, we have got to have, once again, generational thinking, where we're thinking 2, 3, 4, and maybe even 5 generations down the road, planning that out, looking, doing whatever we can with that in mind to accomplish it. At least 4 generations in mind. Fathers, the faithfulness of your children and the future faithfulness of your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, do not be mistaken, is very much dependent upon your faithfulness, whether you like it or not. First to God, your faithfulness first to God, and then to your children. So, what are you doing to help them remain faithful? How much time are you devoting to their spiritual training? Now, I know that there are fathers who are intimidated about providing spiritual instruction and leading family devotions. Well, let me give you some advice, those of you who haven't yet been able to take that on because you're just not sure that you have the ability or the spiritual insight to do it. Let me give you some advice on how to go about it. That any father at any stage of spiritual growth can do. Just begin by picking a book of the Bible. And I might suggest, particularly as you begin, pick the book of Proverbs and read a small portion of it to your children, no matter what their age is. And of course, you're going to try to relate to them at their age, whatever it may be. But read a small portion to your children and then comment upon it. And make practical application for life today. Now listen to me. That's how simple it is. Solomon's already done most of the work for you. And that's why I say pick the book of Proverbs. Most of it's already done. He's already laid out the devotional outline for you. You just start in Proverbs chapter 1 and start going through it. And apply it and share it with your children. Some of the best devotionals that I've had with my children have been in the book of Proverbs. And I think we could go back and back and back and back and keep learning and gleaning. There's so much there. The whole Word of God is living and active. And it's never-ending what you can glean from it and share with your children. Now, I'll guarantee you that as a result, that your children will ask you questions that I guarantee you will be unable to answer. But don't let that intimidate you either. That's what I know many of you are afraid of. Don't let that intimidate you. Just let them know you don't know. And there's nothing wrong with that. They'll appreciate that. They're going to appreciate a father who's humble much more than they will father who's arrogant and prideful, I'll guarantee you. Just let them know you don't know and that you'll find out. And then ask your pastor. Or, better yet, do a word study yourself and see what God has to say about their question, the subject of their question, and then report back to your children at a later time. And I assure you, not only will you be fulfilling your role as your children's spiritual mentor and having a bigger impact on their lives than you can even imagine, but your own relationship with Yahweh will be greatly increased as a result. I guarantee it. In fact, you don't have to take my guarantee. God guarantees it. If you spend that time with your children, you spend time in His Word, sharing it with your children, and time on your own in His Word, you will be blessed, and your relationship with Yahweh will be increased beyond what you can imagine. Don't minimize the importance of this. Your children desperately need this kind of involvement from their fathers in their lives. The impact is unbelievable. As important as a mother's spiritual input is in her children's life, it can never replace that of a father's instruction. And that's why God said it's your primary responsibility. Now, let's move on to another area that should be, again, once again, primarily, not exclusively, but primarily the responsibility of fathers, that of discipline or corporal punishment. That should be primarily the responsibility of fathers. And the reason I say that is for two reasons. First, because of the following scriptures. Proverbs 13:1, for example, says, "A wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke." Proverbs 15:5 says, "A fool despiseth his father's instruction, but he that regardeth reproof is prudent." And then Hebrews 12 and verse 9 tells us, it says, "Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live?" So you can see that the emphasis in the scriptures, I know not of a passage that talks about mothers disciplining their children. Not that mothers shouldn't have a part in that, because they should. We'll talk about that here just shortly. But fathers primarily should take the responsibility of corporal punishment in their family. Secondly, here's the second reason I say that. And not that there aren't some exceptions to this rule, but generally speaking, fathers will not be inclined to be ruled by their emotions in this area. You know, they aren't, when the child starts weeping and crying and has those big brown eyes looking up at you, not that there aren't exceptions, and not that it's not tough for fathers who aren't inclined to maybe follow their emotions so much, but they're not going to be as inclined to do that, to let their emotions rule their minds, what should be done, overrule what should be done, as it is with mothers. Now, I'm fully aware that there are some strict moms, too. You know, after putting her children to bed, a mother changed into old slacks and a droopy blouse and proceeded to wash her hair. And she heard the children getting more and more rambunctious, and as she did, her patience, of course, grew thin. And so at last she threw a towel around her hair and stormed into their room, putting them back to bed with some stern warnings. And as she left the room, she heard her three-year-old say with a trembling voice, "Who is that?" So there are some exceptions. Here's another situation. A little small boy, he had been caught being naughty, and after his mother had told him that he was going to get a whipping, he fled upstairs and hid under the far corner of his bed. Well, his father came into the house shortly thereafter from the field, and the mother told him what had happened, and so he stormed upstairs as well and proceeded to crawl under the bed toward the youngster. And excitedly, the boy, as he saw his father coming to him, he says, "Hello, Pop, is she after you too?" But generally speaking, fathers should be less inclined to be ruled by their emotions. And for that reason, fathers must also, because of that, must also be careful not to be or to go overboard. You know, Ephesians 6:4 not only tells them that they're to instruct their children, But it says that they're to be careful not, while in the way that they do it, not to provoke their children to wrath. And that can not only be done with corporal punishment, but by just the way you react with your children and how you instruct them, and so forth. I think men, fathers, we have probably, we're more inclined to probably be less patient with our children. Again, there are exceptions to that. But we've got to be careful that in our instruction we don't provoke them to wrath. We ruin the effect of what we're trying to do if we go too far. So we've got to have a balance. I've shared this with you in the past. Somebody sent this to me years ago, and I'm very appreciative that they did, because I need to read it from time to time as I'm raising my boys. And I don't know what it is about boys. I guess it's the same thing as it was with me, with my parents, but they take more patience than girls do. Now, again, there's exceptions to that. But there's a poem called Just a Boy, and we need to use this or whatever it is to remind ourselves that we've got to have a balance. It goes like this. Got to understand the lad. He's not eager to be bad. If the right he always knew, he would be as old as you. Were he now exceeding wise, he'd be just about your size. When he does things that annoy, don't forget he's just a boy. Could he know and understand, he would need no guiding hand. But he's young and hasn't learned how life's concerns must be turned. Doesn't know from day to day there is more to life than play, more to face than selfish joy. Don't forget he's just a boy. Being just a boy, he'll do much you will not want him to. He'll be careless of his ways, have his disobedient days, willful, wild, and headstrong too, just as when a boy were you. Yeah. Things of value he'll destroy, but reflect he's just a boy. Just a boy who needs a friend, patient kindly to the end, needs a father who will show him the things he wants to know, take him with you when you walk, listen when he wants to talk, his companionship and joy, don't forget he's just a boy. By Edgar A. Guest. Pretty good. I know it's been good for me to occasionally remind myself that my boys are just boys. Now, it's not that they want to be bad. And so I've got to balance out sometimes my reaction. I need that balance, and so do you probably. Now, I know that applying corporal punishment, i.e., that is, using the rod, is not an easy area for some people, fathers included. In fact, with what I've seen and preached across the country, you know, it's sadly lacking. Not that there aren't exceptions out there, that people that have some very well-behaved children, but they are the exception. And all of us, myself included, I mean, we've got our places where we're not near as good as we should be, too. But overall, let me tell you, as I've preached across this country and at different conferences, it's sadly lacking. And the very place where we should have control of it, it should be in the remnant of Christian Israel, where this should be. I mean, we should have children that we can be proud of, and that aren't a terror to everybody else. So we need to work on this. Let me begin by just quoting some passages that reveal, because we do need work on it, and people, because we need to overrule our emotions, and because it's tough at times to do this. Let me just, by quoting some passages, reveal just how, now listen to me, how vitally important, how essential, imperative, indispensable, and there aren't words enough to describe how important it is, loving, consistent, and frequent, when necessary or until unnecessary, corporal punishment is for your children. Yes, for my children too, but for your children. Don't think your children are an exception to the rule. There is no such thing. Now, don't ask your children. They're going to tell you they're an exception to the rule. They're going to tell you through every way that they can that it's not all that important. I guarantee you. And you'll be inclined to sometimes believe them. You've got to let these scriptures sink into your heart. You know, there was a little farm boy once who was being led out to the woodshed after cutting off his sister's hair. And as his father dragged him by his collar, he asked, "Dad, did Grandpa spank you when you were a little boy?" And the father said, "Yes, he spanked me." And then the little boy said, "And did great-grandpa spank Grandpa when he was a little boy?" he asked. Well, yes, he did. Well, the boy said seriously, he said, don't think that with my help you could overcome this inherited sadism, or sadism, however it's pronounced. You know, they're gonna try to, with everything that they can, tell you that this just isn't all that important, that there's better ways to handle this. Timeouts, and oh, they love timeouts, and all these other means of dealing with their disobedience or whatever. They'll be for them, I'll guarantee you. Well, let me tell you, sometimes those things are important, but more often than not, the rod is what's needed in particular situations. Now listen to me. Either God knows best, or Dr. Spock does, or you do. So which is it? Now let these admonitions sink in so that they will overrule your heart and emotions. Proverbs 13, verse 24, begins by saying, "He that spareth his rod loveth his son." Is that what it says? Most of you know this passage. Is that what it says? Now, be honest. That's what some of you think it says. That's what some of you think in your mind, that if you spare your son, you really love you love him. It's because that's why you'd spare it. But that's not what it says. Instead, that's what today's non-Christians and Antichrist say. For example, here's an article that was sent to me some time back entitled, "Discipline Does Not Require Punishment." Editor's note, it begins by saying, "The following article is one of the series prepared for AP News Features." Oh, well, that's a good authority. The AP, the American Press News Release people. Oh, that's a great place to get your authority. Through the cooperation of the American Guidance Service of Circle Pines, Minnesota. And I can only imagine what kind of organization that may be. Publisher of the Responsive Parenting Program by SAF, S-A-F, Lerman, L-E-R-M-A-N. And I'll let you make your own conclusions or possible conclusions about that particular man or woman, whichever it is, and her background. Third in a series, and then it begins, "Discipline need not be a synonym for punishment." Well, not always. Well, I'll guarantee sometime. Well, in fact, you know, punishment meaning there's lots of different ways of punishment. When can discipline not be a synonym for punishment? I think it probably almost always is. Down later it says, "Use humor." Quote, "Hasn't that hamper of yours picked up its clothes yet? I thought it worked faster than that." End of quote. Yeah, just use humor. Whenever, you know, just forget the rod, just use humor. Not that humor can't be used, but I want to guarantee the second time that the hamper doesn't pick up the clothes, that's not going to be humor in my household. Later on, here's another example, another suggestion. Reverse roles with the child. The parent can start off by saying, "You be me and I'll be you." Children love this. Role reversal gives the child a few minutes to think about the situation. No longer on the spot, the child can often think more clearly. When playing, I'll guarantee you, there's other ways to make children think more clearly than role reversal. When playing the role of the parent, the child gets to set the rules. Oh, well, just imagine the rules the children would love to set in your home. Get to set the rules, helping to instill a clearer understanding of the parent's reasoning. Reversing roles is also playful. More often than not, it puts both the parent and the child in a more cheerful frame of mind. Well, I don't know about I'm sure it does for the child. You know, instead of getting the whipping he deserves, he gets to play daddy and mommy. Well, you know, and don't think that a parent has to be in a cheerful mood when they, you know, you got to be careful that you don't go overboard. You got to be careful that you're not doing it hatefully or anything like that. But let me tell you, the idea that you cannot be angry. You think God's not angry when he disciplines his children? And showing anger sometimes it enforces the discipline that much more. Again, not overboard, not hateful, still loving the child. You can be angry with your child and love him desperately. There's been times, I will tell you, I've been very angry with my children, at least for a short period of time. But it was because I loved them that I was angry. because I didn't want them to grow up to be criminals and rascals or fools or whatever else may have been the case. Continuing now with the article, be prepared to repeat the limit even several times. Well, guaranteed, they get it. There won't be a repeating. There shouldn't be a repeating in your home several times of what you've commanded. They get one shot at it. They break it, and then they're told what the law is. And if they willfully do it again, then they should be disciplined. Children can't be expected to jump on command or remember a rule the first time it's given. Not the first time, but they sure can the second time. Going on, physical punishment in all forms is harmful to children. Oh, is that true? Well, you listen to the Proverbs that Solomon provided to us by the inspiration of Yahweh, and then you tell me whether... You can just decide who you're going to agree. Suppose none of these positive discipline techniques seem to be working. Is it time for spanking? No. Well, that's right. It was probably time for spanking a whole lot sooner in the child's life, before all these other alternatives. Again, some of these alternatives are good at certain times with certain situations, but sometimes there is no replacement for spanking in many cases. And then finally, here's what they end up. Finally, a parent may at times need to remove a child from a situation in which the child is misbehaving. A parent's direct but not hurtful intervention may speak louder than words. A case history. Quote, Sally, age 11.2. That gives you a clue where these people are coming from. Who in the world would ever say in an article, write Sally, who was 11.2 years old? You know, children think of in terms of, I'm 6 and a half. Sally, age 11.2, was throwing sand at another child in a sandbox. Quote, within a quote, sand isn't for throwing at people. Put it in your pail. End of quote, within a quote, said her father. Sally continued to throw handfuls of sand. Her father lifted her from the sandbox and led her to the swings instead. Now, let me ask you something. You know, one of the reasons for discipline is the salvation, the safety of your child. You know, a child who doesn't learn to obey a child of a parent's command the first or second time may be the child who can't be removed from a situation when they run out into the street and are run over and killed by an automobile. Think about the foolishness of the instructions that were found in that article in contrast to what God says. Proverbs 13:24, what does it say? It says, he that spareth his rod hateth his son. I'll guarantee the child gets run over by the vehicle because a parent wanted to remove him from all these situations that he wouldn't obey in is a hateful parent. He that spareth his son hateth his son, but he that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him, chasteneth him betimes. What says betimes in the King James? Well, let's see. Strong's word, shakar, defined as a primitive root, properly, listen to this, to dawn. To dawn. Isn't that interesting? D-A-W-N. That is figuratively, be up early at any task. Get right after it. Don't hesitate. Do whatever needs to be done in the particular situation, with the implication of earnestness, by extension to search for with or painstakingly. Proverbs 13:24 in the New American Standard Version translates it this way. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. You love your child, you diligently discipline him. Consistently, diligently, when it's required, and it's probably required a whole lot more times than you probably think it is. Proverbs 19:18 says, chasten thy son while there is hope. Chasten with just words? Well, Strong's, here's how Strong's defines the word chasten. It says a primitive root to chastise, literally with blows or figuratively with words, hence to instruct. So both. Chasten just with words? No, but with both. Be discerning when verbal or physical chastening is required. We need to be a discerning people in determining when one is required and when the other is required. And by the way, we're going to make mistakes. And children out there, you know, give your parents a break. They aren't perfect. Sometimes they're going to probably discipline you physically when they should have disciplined you verbally. But let me guarantee you this, too. They're going to discipline you verbally sometimes, and probably more oftentimes that way they'll go overboard than when they should have disciplined you physically. So it pretty much evens all out, or pretty close to it. However, in this particular verse, it's speaking of physical rather than verbal discipline because of what the rest of the verse says. Proverbs 19:18 in its entirety. Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. Don't let his crying influence whether you're going to spank him or not. You know, there was one Sunday, and some of you probably have heard this story before, but there was one Sunday in a Midwest city, a young child who was acting up during the morning worship hour, and the parents did their best to maintain some sense of order while in the pew in during the service. But they finally figured out they were losing the battle, and so finally the father picked up the little fellow, walked sternly out of the down the aisle on his way out. And just before reaching the safety of the foyer, the little one called back to the congregation, "Pray for me, pray for me." Well, you know what someone in the congregation should have yelled back? "Son, you need more than prayer. You need a good whipping." Discipline them in church. Now, they need to be disciplined, and it needs to start in the home. I mean, because it can be absolute chaos in the church. But discipline them at home, and I'll guarantee they're going to try to take advantage of a church situation when they know they've got you in a situation, at least think they got you backed into the corner where they can get away with it. You need to discipline them in church, too. Don't not bring them. Bring them. You won't probably have a more understanding group than here. In fact, we'll cheer you. I'll cheer you on as you take them back in the back room. And yes, they're going to make noise. I'll put up with it on the tape. I don't care. Your child's more important than the tape. By the way, be forewarned. Children will fake you out. Test them and see. I've done it. I've playing with them. I've paddled them, knowing that I'm playing, and paddled them just as hard sometimes as I've spanked them with a rod. And because they know I'm playing and I'm joyful and happy about the situation, they laugh about it. They're going to fake you out, I'll guarantee you. Some people are dissuaded, diverted from their duty before they have even applied the switch. And I guarantee you that your child, as soon as he sees that awful object of horrible torture, wooden spoon, will begin to howl and wail like he's already been half killed. Well, not in my home, because my children learned real quick that they would get it twice if they acted like that. Now they're loud a little bit here and there. I mean, I don't expect them to be excited about getting spanked at the moment. But they aren't going to wail and cry like they've already gotten it. They're going to have to hold it back some. And then they'll get it again if they don't turn it off in an appropriate amount of time. They only have a certain amount of time, and it's pretty short. And they've got to turn it off. Now, they can whimper, but they aren't going to be howling and screaming very long at all, or they get it again. Oh, I know, I am so abusive. Just look at my children. Oh, they've been abused so badly. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll stand my children. And again, not that we don't have some faults ourselves, but I'll stand my children up to about anybody's children. As far as when it comes to being well-disciplined and whether they're well-adjusted for society. And who in their right mind would want to be well-adjusted with the society anyway? But I've got children that any man or any father and mother would love to have as far as it goes for discipline and being well-adjusted. Don't be dissuaded by either their crying or your own misguided heart. Jeremiah 17 still, in verse 9 still stands. It says, "The heart is more deceitful than all else," and that applies as much when it comes to disciplining your children as it does to anything else. You're especially when you got this little baby-faced thing looking up at you with brown eyes and tears coming out, and your heart's going to want to dissuade you. Your heart is more deceitful than all else. Proverbs 16:25 applies as well. There is a way which seemeth right unto a man in his heart, but the end thereof are the ways of death. The death of whom? Well, it might be the death of your child. Proverbs 19:18, New American Standard says, "Discipline your son while there is hope, and do not desire his death." The NIV puts it this way. It says, "Discipline your son For in that there is hope. Do not be a willing party to his death. It might be your child's death if you listen to your heart when it comes to disciplining diligently, persistently, consistently disciplining your children as they need. Proverbs 22 and verse 15 says, "Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it from him." So the question is, do you want to raise a fool, or possibly worse, or do you want to raise an intelligent, well-disciplined adult? There's no better time to remind yourself that you're not raising just your children, but the parents of your grandchildren, than when it's time to discipline your children. You want fools, or worse, raising your grandchildren? Well, then raise your children so they're not fools, by disciplining them and driving the foolishness out of their heart. Because I guarantee you that if you don't do it now, there's going to come a time later in their lives when you can't do it. You'll never be able to ever accomplish it completely. But if you do it now, when they're moldable and shapes, and you can shape them, then you've got a possibility there. Proverbs 23 and verse 13, it says, "Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beateth him with a rod, he shall not die." And that's what it says. "If thou beateth him," and we're not talking about abuse here, but if you really get after it, you're not going to kill him. I don't know if you ever noticed or not how children's bottoms are perfectly cushioned, and that's where the discipline should be applied. You know, you shouldn't be slapping your children across the face or shaking them, especially a baby, or any of those kinds of things. Get a rod out and use it where they're cushioned and been made, where God perfectly made them to be able to take the discipline. You know, there were two men sitting around talking about their childhood days, and one of them said, "My father was a cultured man. Every time he took me to the woodshed, he proposed a toast." The other man said, "Really? What was it?" "Bottoms up," the other said. That's what we needed, bottoms up. Grab the ankles or whatever's necessary. Bottoms up, because that's where, and you're not going to kill them, I'll guarantee you. Proverbs 23, verse 13 and 14, it says, "Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beateth him with the rod," we read 13, we're adding 14 to this, "Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beateth him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shall deliver his soul from hell." New American Standard, that was King James. New American Standard Version is much better. It says, "Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you beat him with the rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with the rod and deliver his soul from Sheol." Now that's better, but it's still, you know, for a lot of people, Sheol means hell. Here at the NIV, which is very seldom the case, but is better yet in its translation, it says, "Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with the rod, he will not die. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death." Sheol was the abode of the dead. It's a grave. That's what Sheol means. It's not hell. So he's saying you'll deliver him from death. Well, how's that? Well, it's fools that often get themselves killed or end up killing someone else, is it not? Not always, but many times that's the case. Proverbs 29:15 now says, "The rod and reproof gives wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." The opposite of foolishness is wisdom. The rod drives foolishness from a child, and the rod also brings in wisdom. The rod of discipline both drives out foolishness while at the same time instilling wisdom. Have you ever noticed that heredity is something people believe in if they have a bright child? You know, never brought up, heredity is never brought up if you got a real dummy. You know, you got a fool on your hands. Well, wisdom doesn't have so much to do with heredity as it does with good parenting skills, including corporal punishment. Lastly, Proverbs 29 and verse 17 says, "Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul." My children, let me tell you, my children bring delight to Linda's and my souls. And that didn't just happen by accident. Had we done as most of the world today, most of today's world, today's parents are doing, I'll guarantee you our children would have been just as big of fools and rascals and hoodlums as everyone else's. It didn't just happen by accident. But the question is, when do they bring us that delight? At home? Well, sometimes, and by the way, let me point this out, my children always delight my soul. But sometimes they delight my soul more than at other times. Now, at home, no. Well, sometimes. But not, let me tell you, not all the time. Because that's the training ground. That's where the discipline is most often required. So, where then? Where then? Well, in public. Where the fruits of discipline can be seen, and where other people's children are usually the worst and embarrass their parents the most. That's where they delight the soul. You know, to see them how they behave out in public. I'm amazed that sometimes they're the same children. But that's because the home is the training ground. That's where we're dealing, we're molding and shaping them, so that when they're out in public or when they're grown up, they'll be a delight to our souls. Now, they delight us at all times. Even when they're not behaving as they should, they still delight us. The real delight comes as the fruit of the home discipline and work that you put in there, where at least where you primarily deal with it. Diligently, consistently, lovingly discipline your children, and I guarantee they will bring delight rather than embarrassment to your soul. Are you embarrassed by your children when in public, at church, or wherever it may be? Then obviously you're not raising a disciplined child. Let that clue you in that you need to change your ways. Now, the truth is, most Christians only give lip service to this, while their actions demonstrate that in this particular area, they have made Dr. Spock their authority, rather than Yahweh. Let me assure you, to do other than what the Scriptures say in this area of parenting will do neither you nor your children any favors. Overrule your heart. You've got to think of their... You've got to let the future, your future plans, your future vision of your children overrule your heart's perspective on the present situation when your child's looking up with his or her big brown eyes thinking you shouldn't spank them. While being quote-unquote kind, because that's what it is, it's not really kind, it's unkind. While being quote-unquote considerate, that's what it is, it's quote-unquote considerate, it's inconsiderate. When quote-unquote being charitable, it's not charitable at all. It's uncharitable. When being quote-unquote kind, quote-unquote considerate, quote-unquote charitable for the moment, you may very well be ruining your child for a lifetime. In fact, you may be partly to blame one day for the death of your foolish child. Fathers, the responsibility is primarily yours. The mothers don't think that you don't need to take up the slack when fathers aren't absent. Climb under the bed and yank Junior out and give him what he needs yourself when Dad's not around. Because the discipline needs to come. If you don't, I'll guarantee that those children, in the absence of their father, will take advantage of you. And fathers, that's going to happen to some degree, and you'd better be prepared to take up the slack then and not allow your child to ever, ever get away with that. Now listen to me. Some of us with an understanding of our Israelite heritage, with hearts turned to our forefathers, have a tendency to brag about our ancestors. But more important is giving our descendants something to brag about in us. The ancient paths, our heritage, must not be neglected. But we must also look to our future heirs as well. We must not only look to the patriarchs of old, but prepare and train the patriarchs of the future. An Elijah company that begins here and now with you and me. Let us go to our Heavenly Father. Father, we thank you and praise and glorify you again as our God, King, Judge, and Lawgiver, as the instructor of our ways. And Lord, let us take that instruction to heart, especially in this area, Father, in being the men and women, the fathers and mothers, Father, that and uncles and aunts, or whatever it may be, that we need to be, Lord, now and for the future, for your glory and your honor and for the sake of your kingdom. Help us, Lord, in this area to not let our hearts rule, but help us to let you rule our hearts in this area and to raise our children and to discipline them and to raise up godly warriors, Father, who someday will take the kingdom back from the Antichrist. Let it be so. Let it begin here and let it begin with us. We praise you in Yeshua the Christ, our Lord and Savior. Amen.